Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Week with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Rybakina secures second 500 of the season.
Pliskova wins her first title in 4 years.
And Tennis Weekly goes behind the scenes at UTS Oslo.
Kim, Chris, today is the 12th of February and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. We are back after our break, after the Australian Open. We are relaxed, we have rejuvenated ourselves, and we have lots and lots of tennis to discuss. It's a great time in the season, I think, because there's so much tennis going on genuinely around the world. The Golden Swing is happening, there's tennis in Europe, and Chris, you have just come back from Oslo.
I have. It was minus 21 degrees when we landed.
Oof.
I think Casper said in Australia it was minus 14 and it was much colder than he said. So I did not pack appropriate winter clothing.
Well done for surviving that. I cannot imagine being in those temperatures. That is just very, 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 very chilly.
We're not built for it. We really aren't. I had almost like a cagoule or a Mac and then lots of layers.
Could you see your breath in the indoor arena?
I mean, it was a big arena. You definitely could. If I was a player, the only person wearing shorts in the press conference was obviously Holger Rune, and they were very short.
What's the hot beverage of choice in Oslo when it's so cold? Hot chocolate?
Don't say it's Vegemite.
Not Vegemite. It's not the promise. I didn't have any Vegemite.
Not that again.
I think it's hot chocolate. I think they have a sweet tooth there. So I think it's the hot chocolate side of things.
Maybe I should book a trip to Oslo then, because I'm a
in
big
the summer,
hot
maybe.
Chocolate fan.
It's probably still quite cold.
I'll be packing the Bovril.
Your Bovril for your trip to Oslo.
Well, we know you're not a fan of Vegemite, but it's been about 2 weeks since we last all got together to talk tennis. So it's
I've
been
just
really
got
nice.
The taste of Vegemite out of my mouth, I think, in those 2 weeks.
Finished rinsing your mouth, Joel. But yeah, what have you guys been up to? Obviously, Chris, you've been to Oslo and come back, and we'll hear a lot more about that later on in the show. But Joel, what's been captivating you over the last week or so on and off the tour?
Well, the tennis has still been going on, but actually last night I did turn away from the tennis and watched a bit of the Super Bowl, which was in the UK, was on overnight. And I enjoyed this tweet that went viral from Andy Murray, where he congratulated Taylor Swift on winning Super Bowl 58, a stunning performance. And I thought it was just quite funny. I think, was it the Kansas City Chiefs? I think they won, but we all know because Taylor Swift was there, because I think her boyfriend plays for the Kansas City Chiefs, something like that. And Andy Murray, he needed no invitation to make a funny tweet out of it.
I had to Google because I assumed that tweet meant she'd done like the halftime show. And I was like, oh, I'll go on and have a watch of that. But it's just the fact that she was in the audience.
She just attended, didn't she, Kim? So maybe it should be congrats to Chris on winning the UTS Oslo with a stunning performance just from watching.
I would have said congrats to Usher because I watched, I did watch the highlights of it, but I was actually more interested in the halftime show. I don't know if any of our listeners agree with me, but I thought Usher put on a cracking
performance. You love a bit of nostalgia, don't you, Joel?
He's got so many bangers in his catalogue.
Is he still going or is it all like old school tunes?
I think he has a vague,
which I know you love.
It was a lot of old school tunes. He brought out Alicia Keys and he did Yeah with Ludacris and Lil Jon.
Oh, this is an NFL podcast.
I was going to say this isn't an NFL podcast, so I'm going to move on swiftly. Ooh. Taylor Swiftly. I didn't mean to say that. It just came out. I loved on Instagram this week, talking about social media. We know Andy Murray's great at it, but I thought that ATP, they released the ATP Tour reality show, which featured Andy Murray, of course. Novak Djokovic was there. Andre Rublev, a Dominic Thiem, a whole host of players. And if anyone hasn't seen it, I would thoroughly recommend you give it a watch, because I thought it was actually quite funny, quite a laugh. And I guess it's kind of taking a bit of, you know, taking the piss out a bit out of, you know, the Netflix Breakpoint. But yeah, what did you guys have a look at that? What did you guys think?
I did. I thought it was hilarious. I think Andy Murray is just one of the best people for this sort of like gig. He's
so deadpan.
He's great. Like he will literally give you that every time, and it's perfect in that sort of format. But I did love Djokovic practicing whilst looking in the mirror, ripping his shirt open. I thought, you know, yeah. That was like so close to home, but so funny. And I think it's great they all didn't take themselves too seriously. I actually asked Rublev if he would believe, you know, because they talked a lot about script writers in the reality show, that it's all scripted reality. I asked him, would he believe the script for UTS Oslo? And he said no, but we can hear more from that later in the second half. But linking with that and the fact that we wouldn't believe the fact that what went down in Oslo, Gael Monfils was disqualified from a tournament without a code of conduct. It's an exhibition. I couldn't believe that. So that's my irreverent thing for this week.
I don't think I've ever heard that before. A player getting chucked out of an exhibition, that just doesn't sound like something that has ever happened before.
Never at the Boodles. Definitely not. You know, you couldn't get kicked out from there. You'd be given a nice seat and a glass of champagne. But
and a valet would come pick you up.
I had a chalet in Oslo. That's at Airbnb.
It seems like the other end of the scale from a tournament, like an actual tournament with rules, where a player doesn't get disqualified when they arguably should. You know, there's probably been instances where Nick Kyrgios should have been disqualified and hasn't been. And then, you know, you get this instance happening. But yeah, we'll get on to all the details later in the second part of today, because you will be bringing us all
Indeed.
The gossip from Oslo. Thank God you were there, Chris, braving the cold to bring
all
us
the
all
stories,
of that action.
All for Tennis Weekly.
Exactly. Well, moving to warmer climes, we did have the WTA 500 event in Abu Dhabi, which Elena Rybakina did win. It's her second title of the season. She beat Daria Kazatkina 6-1, 6-4 in straight sets, bringing her total career titles up to 7. This was quite a straightforward week, well, more or less for her. She sort of came through, had a couple of three-setters, but very standard in the final over Kazatkina. Rybakina coming in saying she didn't play with much expectation this week because of, you know, that kind of blink of a loss in Melbourne at the Australian Open, which, you know, amazing match, but quite a shocking result. Chris, I don't know if you saw too much of this being in Oslo, but what do you think about Rybakina clinching this title? What did you make of her week out in Abu Dhabi?
I think it's a good week for her again. She's picked up 2 500s, as we kind of have already said. I think it's a shame she hasn't been doing this at some of the bigger tournaments last year. It feels like she's one of those players who's now in this sort of top three that we're talking about. I think actually she's number 4 maybe in the rankings now, who's putting together some great results at tournaments. But again, we want to see that in the later stages of slams. I think we missed seeing that at the AO. So it's great that she's able to kind of get her form back and play really well here. But at the same time, I do think I'd like to see her push deeper in the slams this year, because since that Wimbledon title, she's got close in Australia, but that was now a year ago. So I was pretty impressed with her. She served pretty well. She beat Samsonova, who has got the better of her previously. So that's a great result for her. But I have to say, and there's something I've got to ask you, Joel, has Danielle Collins had some of the most unlucky draws of anyone's season, especially being her final season, where she's just playing Grand Slam winner after Grand Slam winner?
If there is one player, I think, who's had unluckier draws maybe so far this season, it was her opponent in round one, which I think Naomi Osaka. But certainly, yeah, she's just had very tough opponents, you know, so far since that announcement. But the performance she's put out there has made me think, like, oh, did she say that too soon? Because, you know, she had a very good win against Osaka, 7-5, 6-love. And I think against Rybakina, she was a set and a break up before losing in 3. So she's definitely kind of still, you know, committed and all in on her tennis up until, you know, the very end. So I've been impressed with...
You love a bit of Danielle Collins.
Yeah, I still think there's like some,
there's more,
you know, feeling and burning desire in there. And I do wonder whether she announced retirement too early. I mean, maybe, you know, on the flip side, she could look at it like, well, now I've announced it, that monkey is off my back and I'm just going to give it my all. And as a result, we're seeing some of the performances that take me back to, you know, when she went on that incredible run at the Australian Open.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would have loved to seen Osaka play Rebecca, and I'm sure we'll get that, but that could have been fun as well.
No, Kim, we must have Osaka versus Garcia 4, 5, 6 times first of all.
Well, yes, because arguably, you know, Osaka losing to Collins first round of Abu Dhabi, should she, you know, go down, drop a tier, go down to some, you know, lower ranked tournaments. But Osaka actually today, they're out in Doha now. They've moved on to the next stop on the tour. Faced with Caroline Garcia first round, Osaka has actually come through that one. So although she's had some bad, tough draws coming back, perhaps she just does need to stick at it and the results will eventually come. What do you think? That's
tough. So you wouldn't put her down into kind of 250 and maybe even 125. Maybe that's a bit too far, but you wouldn't like to see her play 250 and get more match practice?
I'll see how she does this week, because it might just all come together all of a sudden and she goes deep, and then that's it. Just, you know, I think it's only been a month, hasn't it, that she's been back. So I think give her a bit more time. But if it's, you know, going on a long, long time and she's really struggling, absolutely drop it down. You know, I'm sure that she would. That sort of seems like a sensible decision should it come to that. And I mean, also, players returning, you know, we had Emma Raducanu last month. We were talking obviously about her return to the tour. She was in this tournament as well, and she had a good win over Buzkova in the first round, which was promising, and came up against Ons Jabeur, the second seed, in the next round, but yeah, did fall in straight sets. Joel, what did you make of Emma Raducanu in this tournament?
I mean, it's just been a whirlwind, I think, last 7 days or so, because it was a very impressive performance, I think, against Buzkova. I was kind of wondering, was Ons Jabeur there for the taking? Because, you know, she's not really had a great start to the season. But yeah, Raducanu wasn't able, I think, to showcase her best tennis. And unfortunately today, you know, she lost in the first round in Doha, got bageled, you know, in the first set against her opponent. And I wondered similar questions that I was thinking about with Osaka kind of, you know, last week, was whether it would make more sense for her to play kind of 250s and 125s as opposed to getting wild cards into these events, because, you know, she's coming up against some very tough opposition after a long time away, and maybe the match practice is a lot better to serve her and the time on court, as opposed to kind of getting the ranking points, or, you know, having those higher amounts of ranking points available in these higher level tournaments.
I think you can definitely spend too much time on the practice court, and I think one of the things you've got to do is you've got to play a lot of matches, and I think playing a lot of matches obviously helped her get that US Open title by playing 10 matches in that US Open to win it. So I think for Emma, I think it's no bad thing playing some of the smaller tournaments. And I think after this week, I think she's talked about that already, the fact she's going to change up her schedule, she's not going to play in Dubai, but then she is heading back to the practice court. So I'd like to see her play some of the smaller tournaments and get some more ranking points and do some more problem solving on the court against a variety of different players, because I think otherwise you're so reliant on the draw. And I think that's the same thing you kind of just said with the Osaka comments, is if you keep getting a bad draw, you might be playing great tennis, but you might be drawing the world number 4 or a top 10 player every week. And that's not easy to get your ranking back up again.
Well, some players as well this week, you know, struggling with the back-to-back Abu Dhabi to Doha, you know, Kazakina in the final. She's already lost today in Doha. So, yeah, it's kind of maintaining your form as well across these back-to-back weeks. But we'll see what Rybakina can do. But yeah, well done, Rybakina, picking up second title of the season. Just kind of goes to show that AO match with Blinkova, you know, how did she... If she'd have got through that, would we
just
have
one
seen
point
the rest of the tournament? Yeah, would it have gone very differently at the rest of the Australian Open? I don't know. Well, she had so many chances to win, didn't she? But let's have a look at the other tournaments. We've had quite a few this week. We had the Transylvania Open in Romania. Now, this is usually in sort of October time, but it's been moved to this time of the year. Am I right in thinking?
Yes.
because this is when Christian normally brings out her cape, which I know you love, Joel. But yeah, it's been moved, and Karolina Pliskova has won this event, which actually ends a four-year wait for her latest singles title on tour. It's been a while since she's actually picked up a trophy. Back in Brisbane, 2020 was the last one. So, gosh, pre-pandemic, a lot has changed since then. But she came through against Romanian player Anna Bogdan, 6-4, 6-3 in the final. Chris, what do you make of Pliskova getting back to winning ways out at the Transylvania Open?
I think, you know, this is the theme of the week. We're saying drop down and get some good results going and then bring it to one of the bigger tournaments. And clearly there's been a long period of time where she hasn't been able to find her form, where she's been a player who's kind of sometimes put it together in terms of getting kind of decent results at tournaments, but not necessarily going all the way and winning them like she used to when she was world number one. So I think it's very impressive that she's done this. I think it makes a lot of sense for her to drop down. And she was very, very good behind serve, which I think is brilliant. And unlike the other finalists, she has made it through today. So hopefully she can build on this, because I think we all thought at that Naomi Osaka match at the start of the year that, I mean, where was that tennis? Where did it come from? Because we hadn't seen it on the tour, I mean, in such a while. So, I mean, it's been a quietly positive start for Pliskova. And I think this title actually does set her up that maybe she will have a bit of a resurgence this year.
I mean, it's been going on for too long. I mean, 4 years from winning her last title, for a player of Pliskova's quality, that to me is too long. And I think it was great to see, in, you know, across the week, you know, she was just free hitting. I think her movement has improved a lot this season. And we all know her, like, hitting capabilities from the back of the court. It can just overpower her opposition. And I really think that was, you know, the case, particularly against, you know, players like, you know, Rani in the quarters, 6-2, 6-love. And then Dart as well in the semis, who had a very good week regardless. Yeah, that power that she possesses, it's almost just kind of, I think, harnessing it, because she is almost known, I think, more for the unforced errors as opposed to her winners now.
Well, there weren't many good players in the tournament in terms of ranking-wise. I think we should point that out. Mm. Obviously, it is a 250, and there is some great players. It's tough to win one of these. I know Blinkova was in the draw as well. But I do think that does kind of, I mean, you said Sara Errani in the quarterfinals of a 250. Again, that's not something we've seen in a while. So I think it will be a much bigger test, as you've said, when you kind of go and play against some of the other top players, and whether you'll get...
I mean, yeah. Chris, Errani over Maria, 6-love, 6-1. I think it was 53 minutes, which is the... which is the shortest WTA match of the season so far. That was a scoreline I was very surprised by, that left me, as much of an Errani fan I am, I was very taken by surprise by that scoreline.
I mean, I think everybody was. I really think we were scratching our heads. And then turns out, when you look at the head-to-head, it is just a really bad head-to-head for Maria, because she's been bageled before to Errani.
Wow.
Never won a set. And it's always been a bit of an annihilation. So I'm not sure, maybe it's Maria's slices don't work against Errani. She just can go straight through it. Or maybe it's that booming serve that Sara Errani has that gets her all the free points on indoor hard courts.
Yeah, I mean, Errani must be her bogey woman. But I mean, if, I know you mentioned Harriet Dart there, Joel. She doesn't normally feature in the semifinals of a WTA tournament.
Ever.
So fantastic for her. Even though it's a 250, like, this is great.
And not on like a grass court or in, you know, the British grass court season. Because I think if we were going to say Harriet Dart in a WTA semi-final, we're probably thinking, yeah, some sort of British-based event on the grass. Mm. So it's amazing to see, I think, some of the Brits playing really well, but playing really well abroad. I mean, the last couple of weeks, I mean, you spoke about Raducanu. Jodie Burridge last week had, you know, some good matches on the WTA tour away from home at Dart this week.
Watson took out Kudermetova.
Yeah, Watson. You got to the doubles final as well, I think.
Indeed.
In Abu Dhabi. Yeah, Heather Watson. Some really good British results as well. So, yeah, fantastic from them. And Christian actually did get to the semis as well. So she does love this tournament for various reasons. But well done, Pliskova, winning her first title in a long time. And we'll have to see if she can, yeah, replicate that on the higher level events. Over on the men's side, we had a 250 down in Marseille, which was won by Hugo Humbert, so local French player, picking up the win, 6-4, 6-3 over Grigor Dimitrov, who continues his his generally good form of the year. Hugo Humbert, this is his fifth career title, and really great stat for him. He has never lost an ATP final. He's won his first five finals, which, you know, some players struggle and struggle and struggle to just get one. You know, they lose multiple finals, but he's never lost in one, which I think is very impressive. Joel, did you see much of Hugo Humbert picking up his fifth title on the weekend?
I mean, you know, when it's a tournament in France, you're always sort of suspecting which kind of Frenchman is going to go deep and maybe... Well, I know, you were all thinking, was it going to be Mannarino? But no, he was somewhere else. I think he was in... I think he was playing another tournament.
He was out in Dallas.
Yeah, he was in Dallas.
He was stateside.
But he maybe ruined that decision because he is no longer the French number one, which I know is a very popular topic at Tennis Weekly HQ, because Humbert has now taken that with a win against Dimitrov. And I think, you know, that final just showed the level that Humbert is playing at the moment, because, you know, Dimitrov on this type of surface, he's a very, very smooth operator. And he has been so over the last 6 months or so. So to get it done, 6-4, 6-3, his serve looked great. I think he hit 10 aces across the match. And I think it's very, you know, very well deserved from him. And great performance.
Well, fun fact, if you'd like to know this, I was actually standing with Jeremy Chardy, his coach, in Oslo when he won.
What? Why wasn't he? What? He was at UTS rather than in Marseille.
Was he coaching by sort of
satellite link?
Psychic coaching?
Well, he didn't have a headset on, so maybe it wasn't a phone call. It must have been something psychic, as you say. But Jeremy Chardy is actually the player liaison for UTS. So
so that more important than coaching Hugo Humbert,
yeah,
I can understand.
And telling me I've got to ask one less question at the next press conference. So he spent a lot of time doing that. But yeah, so, I mean, to do this without your coach being by your side shows that you must be rock solid mentally. And from a tactical perspective, when his A game is on, I mean, we've all seen him play live. And in Manchester, I think it was Alex de Minaur said that his hitting is... I think he said he hits like a world number one, I think was the quote. And a lot of people kind of scoffed at that and thought, I never really thought that of Humbert. But when you do see him in full flight, I mean, he is a real force to be reckoned with, because he does just take all the time away from you. Very much like a Garcia in that sense. Very, very aggressive, big serve. At the same time, maybe mentally more there. So maybe he'll go even higher than she did.
I mean, Dimitrov was a bit flat because he had a very long semi-final as well over Khachanov the day before. But, you know, full credit to Humbert. He's up to a new ranking high of 18 in the world, which does make him the new French number one. Paul Mannarino has been downgraded despite getting to the semi-finals in Dallas, which brings us on to the Dallas Open. Tommy Paul won the event, three-set title match over Marcus Giron, his fellow American. Just on to Mannarino, though. He got to the semi-finals without barely breaking a sweat, didn't he?
Yes.
And I know, Joel, you love it when these sorts of things happen, these sort of scoreboard draw anomalies. But just talk us through his week in Dallas.
Well, I mean, he got a bye as a fourth seed. He got a bye into the second round. Then got a walkover against Nishioka into the quarters. James Duckworth then retired against him 6-2, 3-1 down. So he hadn't really played a lot until he got to Marcos Giron. But it looked like it sort of counted against him, because Giron came out of that quite as a comfortable winner, 6-1, 6-3. So quite an odd sort of journey to the semis. Although I will say, Kim, I think in Abu Dhabi, the doubles, I think Matic Sands and I'm not sure who her partner was, but they basically won, having only played Kenin and Matic Sands, they won having played their first match and the last match of the doubles event.
Well, you know, it's last women standing or last men standing, isn't it? So fair play,
gotta take it.
Well, Tommy Paul was the last man standing in the singles in Dallas, clinching the title. It's his second ATP title, and actually his first title since 2021, so it's been a while for him as well, picking up his second title. I mean, he is obviously the higher ranked opponent in that final over Giron. He was the second seed here, TFO losing to Giron earlier in the event. But Chris, what do you make of Tommy Paul? Do you think he can kind of go on from here? I know we saw quite a bit of Tommy Paul in the recent series of Breakpoint. They were focusing on him quite a bit. But do you think this is onwards and upwards now for Tommy Paul?
I mean, he does play. I mean, he played very well this week. And obviously the caliber opponent isn't always going to be so high at a 250. But I mean, he was edged out in Australia by Kecmanovic, who we know can play very, very well. He took out Jack Draper, who's been having some great form. So again, I think he's building up to potentially having a very nice season, having not necessarily finished in the way that he would have liked to after having a strong start to 2023. So I mean, he is capable of playing some great tennis. And I mean, if you're Carlos Alcaraz,
top 10 tennis,
it depends when he's playing it, but I mean, Carlos Alcaraz doesn't enjoy playing with him, that's for sure. So I think he has his moments, and this is one of his moments. But in terms of the results generally, I think he is more in the top 20, top 15 in the tennis he puts together on the tennis court regularly.
And I mean, it was quite a close final for the first two sets. I think really what made the difference was, you know, he was able to take his opportunities on the Giron serve and save, you know, any of the break points, most of the break points that Giron had on him. So maybe that experience just coming through for him in the final to win the Dallas title. And then final tournament from last week, we were out in Argentina for the Cordoba Open, out on the clay, the start of the Golden Swing, which is all very exciting. And we do tend to see some kind of rogue winners, some qualifiers creeping through sometimes.
Final, Kim, I think.
Yeah. Very rogue final. Italian qualifier Luciano Dardieri up against home qualifier Facundo Bagnis. And it was Dardieri who came through to win his first ATP title. He's only 21. And he came through to tick that box. I mean, fantastic for him to get his first title kind of seemingly out of the blue.
I swear anything can happen in the Golden Swing, because this is a final that was qualifier versus qualifier, and that has only happened three times, I believe, since 1990. So a very kind of surprising kind of final we got. And I think the story of it really was that Bagnis, you know, he just crumpled, I think, under the pressure, maybe the expectation of a home crowd. I mean, he's not won a title at this level. And in that first set, he just went down so quickly to Dardieri. It was like five love down in a matter of moments. And he couldn't really recover from there. And on the opposing hand, you know, with Dardieri, another Italian to announce himself, I think he's now in the top 100. There's six Italians in the top 100. It just feels like that nation is going from strength to strength. But they've got a bottomless pit of men's talent at the moment.
Yeah, and Bagnis, he's, you know, was by far the more experienced of the two of them. Had played in 30 Challenger Tour finals, but only one ATP Tour level final. So just obviously that difference between the two, and maybe it got to him a bit. He, you know, just wasn't at the races. You know, fell by the wayside quite early on, quite quickly. Home fans obviously could only do so much to get him going. But well done, Dardieri. A new title winner, and yeah, a new name to look out for, especially like you said, for Italian tennis, is just adding to the many players that they do have who are potentially on the up. And we'll be getting on to more of the Golden Swing later as we look ahead to the Buenos Aires event, where Tennis Weekly does have some representation, which is very exciting. More on that later. We're going to take a very quick break now, so do join us in the second half, where we'll be discussing all the drama and controversy from UTS Oslo. We'll be thinking about who's going to follow Jannik Sinner as the next first-time Slam winner, and we're going to look forward to the first WTA 1000 event of the season out in Doha. So do not go anywhere.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news?
All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly Podcast. And now we're going to move on to a little game to start off the second half. We do have a par for the courts. It is back. And I believe, Chris, you have one for me and Joel to go head to head on. So what have you got for us this week?
I do indeed. And actually, Kim, we're going to go to the Golden Swing sooner than you thought, because this is Golden Swing themed. I've been doing some digging and some research, and I thought, what could I ask the question about for par for the courts? And I've actually gone for one, which is players who have won multiple Golden Swing titles in their career. So this doesn't have to happen in the same year, just to make it a bit easier. But this does include the Brazil Open, the Mexican Open, and the Ecuador Open that no longer are part of the Golden Swing. So,
oh, phew. Thank goodness.
Yes, exactly.
What a relief.
But just in case there's any confusion, but there are 21 answers. So, and this is spanning from, I mean, quite a long period of time. I think it starts from 2001 is the first date. So that will give you an indication as to the sort of dates we're looking at. 21 answers. It will be a back and forth for listeners who haven't heard this before. It's a battle between Joel and Kim to see who can name more players who've won multiple Golden Swing titles.
Kim, how confident are you feeling?
I'm just scouring my knowledge of like Spanish players. Yes. Which is from like the noughties right
Spanish
now.
Spanish players in the noughties is actually your mastermind subject, Kim. So I think this might play into
well, I don't
your
know
hand.
About that.
Would you like to let Joel start okay. then, Kim? Take some pity on him.
I don't mind, yeah. Happy for you to start, Joel.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'm going to go with... I don't even know where to start. I'm going to say... Juan Carlos Ferrero.
That is a correct answer. He has won two titles. And incidentally, he won them in the same year. So a fantastic guess, but just two. That's the 12th highest number.
Okay.
Should I say the obvious? I feel like surely he has. Rafa Nadal.
Indeed, he's won six.
Oh,
thank God.
I was, you know, I didn't want to say him because I was like, he's too good for the Golden Swing.
You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, but in his early days. And he did win one, I think, a few years
2015,
back.
2015.
When he was
correct.
Coming back a bit, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go for David Ferrer.
That is the top answer. The most titles won in the Golden Swing with seven.
I'm going to go for Tommy Robredo.
A fantastic answer. It's a correct three titles.
Gustavo Kuerten.
That's another great answer with three titles.
I'm a bit stressed now. Fernando Verdasco.
Oh, that's a great shout.
I'm afraid...
I don't think it's right,
that's
though.
That's an incorrect answer.
Oh, no, not Verdasco.
Drat. Okay, Joel. Well, you still need to get one, I think, to win, don't you?
Well, I think I've
Joel
answered
started.
Three.
Oh, no, you started.
There we go.
Do you know what?
You didn't even have that to fall back on.
I had loads of other players
in my mind.
Come on,
give me some of the other ones.
Almagro?
Almagro was a fantastic one.
Oh, okay.
Kim, I was going to go for another Fernando. Fernando Gonzalez.
Yes, exactly. Fernando. Joel, why are you so good at the Golden Swing? is this your...
What about Nicholas Lepenti?
I mean, there's another Nicholas on the list.
Yeah, Nicholas Massey.
Yes, indeed. Mm, is there anyone else? Yeah.
What about Berrettini? Did he win when he was sort
It is
of
not Berrettini, but I can fully win on the rest of the list now. There was another Spaniard.
Costa on there?
Alcaraz?
Alcaraz was on there indeed. There's Carlos Moya.
Oh, Carlos Moya.
Pablo.
Cerundolo?
Cerundolo has not, but there's Pablo Cervezas? I want to say that wrong. I'm definitely saying that wrong.
Cuevas,
yeah. Yes. Victor Estrella Burgos. Christian Garin. We haven't had him.
Oh, yes.
Dominic Thiem.
Yeah.
Gamero Correa. We have Fabio Fognini. I said that wrong. We have Gaston Gaudio. Louis Horner. Juan Monaco, Diego Schwartzman, and the most recent addition, Casper Ruud. So that is the list of 21. So I would say, Kim, you had names, and you really did hand that one to Joel on a plate.
I just threw it away on Joel.
Yeah. Kim, you definitely could have put me under some pressure there, because beyond Gonzalez, I was stuck, yes.
Some of those names, like Juan Monaco, like absolute blast on the pass there.
Play with amazing. A ponytail or longish hair?
Yeah, longish.
At some point, maybe. Juan Monaco?
Yeah. I think he had it. Yeah. I think he maybe had at one point a ponytail, normally a bandana sort of vibe. Oh, he did have long hair. Mm. He did. Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting confused with Xavier Melis. I don't know.
No, he did have long hair, but I can't say he had a ponytail. That is Xavier Melis, yes, but... well done, Joel.
Well done, Joel. Wow. Congratulations.
I'm just in
my knowledge of the golden swing. My knowledge of the golden swing has got me a victory in Path of the Courts. Fantastic.
I'm going to dig into the Tennis Weekly mailbag now and see who's got in touch. We have Andy on email, who has asked us a question. Thanks very much, Andy. He said, "Hi, Tennis Weekly. With Jannik Sinner breaking through to win his first ever Grand Slam singles title, who do you think is next in line to win their first major on the ATP tour? And also, who would be the equivalent on the WTA tour?" So thanks for your question, Andy. Chris, I'm going to you first. Who do you think are the two that are next to win on both the ATP and WTA sides?
This is a really tricky question, isn't it? Because a lot of players have picked up a slam, especially on the women's side. But I'll start with the men. It's tough. I'm going to say, I think, is Casper going to get one? I'm racking my brain.
Not Runa.
There's just something about it being the next one. And I think that it might be, everyone is very equal at the moment. So I'm going for someone who has got to finals previously, who's come the closest. So that's my logic there. And the closest most recently and regularly. And it would be the French coming up next. So that's what I'd say for that. And then I have to go Svitolina, because I picked her for the French. She's probably one of the best players that's never won a slam, that has played the game. And I'd love to see it. So that's what I'm going for.
Joel, do you want to go next?
I don't think many people are going to like my answer, but I think it's Sasha Zverev. I think he's been playing some very good tennis, and if he continues on the path that he plays, I think he's going to get his opportunities. If he's allowed to continue, very true. Mm. But yeah, I'm going to go Zverev on the men's side, and on the women's side...
Go rogue. Come on, Joel. Kalinina, come on.
The answer I want to give is on Jabeur, because I just think it'd be a nice feel-good story, and I hope maybe that happens at Wimbledon, but I don't know if I can see that at the moment, and maybe.
What about Anoskova or Linda? Well, you could have a Linda.
Well, actually, I'm going to say Jessie Pegula.
Do you really believe that Jessie Pegula is going to win a slam?
I think, look, she's just sacked a coach. I think she's going to have
never made it past the quarterfinal.
She's going to have a new setup, I think new beliefs, I'm going to back Jessie
Kim,
Pegula.
Do you agree?
It's tough, though. It's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. It's very difficult. I'm going to say...
Samsonova.
I don't know again. If these will be the next...
Samsonova.
And Mukova. That would be a good one. You could say Mukova.
Oh, yeah, to be fair, Mukova. Yeah. I was thinking Ondrejva, but I don't know if that's... She would be the next one. And then for the men, I was thinking Runa, but then I think I do like your thought process on Ruud. I'm going to say Ben Shelton, though, because I feel
prediction.
Like he could
interesting.
Just come before them. Yeah. You know, we'll see. It's this difficult.
Good question,
Many
Andy.
Factors have to
Do we
happen.
Think it's going
to
happen this year?
No, to both of them. Not this year. I don't think we'll have another first time this year. Not on the men's side.
Ooh. I think we might have... No, I agree with Kim. I'm agreeing with Kim. Kim is very good at predicting.
I don't know. I always think, because it's an Olympic year, there is so much tennis, and we always get some rogue... Could be an opportunity to have some rogue Grand Slam winners right at the end of the year after a very, very long season.
Mm. Well, we had some rogue results and action out in Oslo last weekend for the UTS, as we mentioned earlier. Andre Rublev won, though. He has become the first two-time UTS champion. He beat Alex de Minaur in the final. And sorry, I shouldn't say their real name, should I? It's Rublo. And what was Alex de Minaur's
name,
Chris?
The Demon.
The Demon, of course. So Rublo beat the Demon. But I suppose we won't go into kind of all the scores and things like that, but it was the off-court action that was actually what made the headlines. It went a bit astray. So Chris, tell us what went on. Monfils got kicked out. Two players withdrew with supposed food poisoning, and we had a random Danish kid kind of turn up and play. Is that
well?
Right?
It was a Norwegian kid,
sorry.
Yes, exactly. I am in Denmark, but I was in Norwegay, so yes.
I was like, what, was it
and
Chris?
It's not me.
Yeah. I didn't do very well, and they didn't pay me, so it wasn't the best in that sense. But no, so very, very rogue what went down, and I think kind of to unpack this, it was very dramatic because on court. In the match between Monfils before the disqualification, Le Monf and the Demon, Alex de Minaur, nothing untoward happened in that match at all. And then it was announced before the final match of the evening that he'd been disqualified. But I did have a little bit of an idea that he might be because I did see him leave the tournament. He was smiling when he left, so I didn't think anything too bad had gone down. But just before he was supposed to do press, there were four medics that ran to the locker room, and then the announcement came later in the evening. So we thought maybe there'd been an accident or something, and that was confirmed by UTS. But, I mean, when you hear disqualification, you never think you're going to hear the name Gael Monfils attached to that. And so I was very relieved when the statement did come out that it was very much the case that nothing untoward had happened that was deliberate. It was very much a playful incident occurred in the locker room, and that the tournament supervisor had become injured from that, and therefore the disqualification was given. There was no abuse, no violence, no malice or negativity. But I mean, a question for both of you: if there was no malice or negativity and there's no code of conduct at UTS, why was he disqualified?
Yeah, it's very mysterious, because I think when this statement came out, well, sorry, before the statement, but when it was just announced that he'd been disqualified, you know, we all thought, oh my God, something absolutely terrible and awful must have happened. This is very unlike Monfils. Like, what on earth's going on? But it does sound like, yeah, it was just kind of a playful incident.
A slip and a fall.
Without malice.
Or something like
exactly.
that. But then why the disqualification, Joel? That's my question.
It's a weird one because it's a new event. It doesn't feel like it obviously operates outside of like the rules and the jurisdiction, I guess, of the tour, but it doesn't like it sounds like they're still not set up in terms of to deal with absolutely every, you know, incident, and as a result it feels like it becomes more of, you know, based on opinions and someone says something and someone just accepts it. But it almost sounds like there was no rule book, but they still went by maybe the rules of like the ATP tour as a guideline, even though that necessarily wasn't in place.
Yeah, and I guess it would have to be, but I was kind of thinking, what if in this sort of like playful interaction that Gael had with the tournament supervisor, what if Gael had become injured? You know, that's also, it's two kind of grown men who are sort of fooling around in the locker room is what implies this. So hopefully we'll see him at UTS again. It feels like it's likely that there will be, but the statement that came out did make it seem a lot worse, saying that he was disqualified without kind of any explanation attached. But I mean, maybe they didn't have the results of the medical treatment that were given. And in terms of the nature of that injury, not to kind of stipulate too much, but the supervisor was spotted with a bandage on his head. So I think that might answer the question in some ways.
I mean, what was the vibe like in the arena with fans? Was it kind of confusion? Was it shock?
There was some booing that happened when it was announced because he is very popular, like, the world over. But the atmosphere kind of backstage, it was very, very... We were told something really bad had happened and then we were ushered away because we were right by the locker room at the time. So everyone was very, very relieved that, you know, the supervisor, Stefan, was back out and, you know, working the event, and that Lucas Puy did come and fill in. His nickname, the French Flair. So that was all fine, and I'm pleased that's been kind of cleared up. But then you would not believe the script of what happened next, because we then find out that Holger Rune has then withdrawn, and at the same time we find out the team has also been withdrawn with supposed food poisoning. So they're down three players for UTS, which, I mean, they were due to play each other as well. So a junior from Norway is drafted in. They are playing, and then a full match is cancelled. But, I mean, again, there are some rumours here that if you have food poisoning and the next day you're on court in Rotterdam, it might seem like this might be slightly premeditated. So there was a few question marks there, and also some question marks when we were talking to Rune about his coaching setup. Obviously, the news of Boris broke as well. There was no comment, any of that, but we did ask, and other people did ask about his mother's involvement. And the line was that she will still be his mother, so she'll still be following him on the tour, but she will no longer be handling press. So she might have been sacked, Annika Rune. So that's also exclusive. So is that good or bad?
Drama.
Is that good or bad? The Tsitsipases have arguably...
It sounds like everything happened in UTS.
I mean, I haven't talked any of the tennis, but I mean, from the family setups that you've seen in tennis, like the Tsitsipases, for example, and the Zverevs, is it better to not kind of have your family manage you in this sense? What would you say to this decision by Holger? Is this the move to IMG and the change of coaching? Is he now taking control of what he's doing rather than it being decided by somebody else, do we think?
I do think there reaches a certain point where you do need to kind of draw away if you feel like you need that freedom to go your own path. And I think it can be difficult when you've got a parental figure who is your actual parent there kind of pulling the strings. So I think, you know, you can always go back, you know, but he's got to try it, hasn't he, if he feels that's the right thing.
Yeah, and to pave your own way in many ways. I was going to make the comparison before it was a no comment situation with Emma Raducanu changing coaches so much. Are you the Emma Raducanu of the ATP Tour almost? But I was going to say, well, you're looking for consistency in the statements that you've said, whereas she was looking for different kind of perspectives to add to her game. So it is very different because it looks like he does want someone who could be with him and travel with him. But then why hire Boris Becker in the first place, who you know can't travel to certain countries because of a criminal record? So, I mean, it's probably a good decision in the long run. But right now it does feel like the Rune camp is in turmoil because it's just Kenneth Carlsen that's left.
Yeah, and that's reflected, I think, in some of the results that we haven't seen from him of late. So I think, you know, maybe some changes were needed. But Chris, you did chat to
Andre Rublev, yes, indeed,
the winner, Rublev, and you did actually ask him about all of the shenanigans in UTS. So let's have a little listen to that now.
Recently, there was the video that came out about the script writers for the ATP. Writing the script on the tour of what happened.
Yeah.
So when you spread the script for UTS Oslo, we've had disqualifications, we've had people pulling out, we've had all sorts going on. Casper didn't win the title. What's your reaction to the script when you read it?
It's like I wouldn't believe that two players will get poisoned and one player will get disqualified. Of course, you would not believe it. But in the end, how the life always proves, everything is possible. And even those things are still possible, that some players get poisoned, something else happens, some different situation, and in the end, it is what it is.
I mean, when he puts it like that, disqualified, poisoned, I mean, it sounds more like a murder mystery or a Cluedo game than a tennis tournament. But, I mean, is this the most dramatic exhibition, bar maybe Djokovic's ill-fated COVID Open that he had, that's ever happened?
Oh, that's I had forgotten about that one.
Adria Tour.
Yeah, oh, that was
it. What it was called?
The Adria Tour. Very good, Kim.
Couldn't name that. Anyone who won a Golden Swing tournament, but does know that.
I could name like a Serbian tennis exhibition
nightclub
during COVID. Yeah. but I mean, it is. Yeah, it's almost like a A game
of
Cluedo, murder mystery,
who done it?
A French farce. Maybe Puy orchestrated it all. French flair. He should have been called the French farce. He thought, I want to play. Let's get rid of some players.
Gael Monfils with the candlestick in the locker room.
Oof, I mean, that's allegedly is what we'll say.
Allegedly, sorry,
that
I should say allegedly.
No malice,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But on slightly less dramatic things, before the tournament. We did get to speak to Alex de Minaur, who was an absolute delight. And we asked him about kind of the biggest win of his career that he's just had, seeking Rublev revenge, which, spoiler alert, he didn't get. And we also talk about his girlfriend, British number one, Katie Bolter. And we start with just how cold it was at minus 21 degrees.
Not the Australian summer anymore.
No, exactly. It's definitely cold. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
Do you have any winter layers for this? Has Casper lent you a coat?
I've brought a lot of clothes, a lot of layers. Yeah. But I was just telling before, we were on our way to find a local coffee shop, 15 minutes away walk. We thought it would be a great idea. 5 minutes in, we realized it was way too cold and we went into the first coffee shop that we saw. So the cold's not
Stay big. Inside, right? Yeah. It's good. It's an indoor tournament.
Yeah.
You got the biggest win of your career at the start of the year in Australia against Novak Djokovic. That's got to feel amazing. A few words on that and why it's so great to then kind of play against some of these top players here this week.
Oh, it's a milestone moment. Mm. I mean, probably the biggest win of my career in terms of a lot of different aspects, right? Last time I played him, he absolutely thrashed me. He gave me a lesson on Rod Laver Arena, basically embarrassed me on the court. So it was a tough one to pick myself back up from and, you know, get my revenge in a way. But yeah, it meant a lot. It gave me a huge confidence boost to really let me know that I'm right there and I can, you know, I belong in that top 10. And now the field here, it's a lot of good players, a lot of exciting
Rublev again.
I'm hoping I can get my revenge. I still haven't been able to sleep since he got me at the Open. So
that's a tough one.
It's tough because I like him so much. He's such a good guy. Yeah, but I really don't. So
yeah, well, hope you get your revenge. Final question we were going to ask. So your girlfriend Katie Bolter is obviously the British number one.
Yeah.
You're called the demon here. I was wondering if you had to give her a nickname for UTS if she were to play, what would it be? I was thinking something like the Leicester Hammer or something like that.
Yeah. But... Well, you can play on that. Yeah, I'm just going to call her the princess.
Okay.
Yeah, just because she doesn't like to get called that because. We kind of use that when she does
the demon and the princess.
Yeah,
sounds like a storybook for kids.
Exactly, yeah. Perfect.
What do you think of the nickname for Katie Bolter? I said the Leicester Hammer, which I'm not sure is a compliment.
The Leicester
he
Hammer.
He said the princess.
Yeah, it's not the most feminine, is it? The Leicester Hammer,
no.
Chris.
Berrettini is the hammer, isn't he?
So maybe it wasn't the most original either. But what nickname would you give?
Lioness.
Oh, I like that.
Leicester Lioness.
That's very nice.
I mean, that's a bit football-y, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. But then she does like Leicester Town.
It's got alliteration.
Joel, can you build on that?
Oh, that's tough.
What's a female version of the demon?
Oh, it's tough.
The deemstress? No, that's not a thing.
I don't know. It's so hard when you get put on the spot to be like, come up with a nickname for a player.
Maybe I shouldn't keep giving them that question at UTS. I should take some pity on them.
Even I'm struggling, but...
It's a classic though, isn't it? It's a classic.
It is.
I'd say like the power from Leicester.
We'll go for the power from Leicester. So Jack Leicester Draper, Jack Draper's nickname plus Leicester.
I hope Joel's not going to be writing poetry.
I hope not either, kid.
Yeah, the title of his first album, The Power from Leicester.
Right, that brings us on to what's happening this week. We've got the WTA 1000 event in Doha. We've got the 500 ATP in Rotterdam, which Jannik Sinner is playing, his first event after winning the Australian Open. Delray Beach is back in the States. That's the 250. And we've got the Argentina Open, another 250, continuing the golden swing where Alcaraz is in action. Let's have a look at Rotterdam to begin with. Jannik Sinner, top seed. And we've got Rublev and the Demon in action as well as their actual real people and names though this time. Any thoughts on the draw in Rotterdam from either of you?
Oh, it's nice to see Denis Shapovalov come through qualifying, I think, and be in the main draw against Monfils. So I'll be interested to see how he goes. And for Sinner, it's, you know, hoping he can just sort of pick up business where he left off in Melbourne. You know, he's had a few weeks off, relaxed, coming back refreshed, and hoping for a good tournament from him as well.
I'd love to see Bublik Sinner if that is a quarterfinal. I think that would be very entertaining. I think that Bublik would really bring his A game. He was in Oslo also. Actually, I wish they'd given us a lift to the airport because they actually flew out pretty much at the same time as us, but we got the bus. But I would also like to see a little bit of maybe Corder Diminar. That would be very interesting to see. And Prismic is actually back playing with a wild card here. So clearly that performance against Novak Djokovic in Australia is paying dividends for him.
Yeah, people have taken note. Well, yeah, let's see how he gets on. He was fantastic against Djokovic in Melbourne, so we'll see. And then out in Doha for the WTA 1000, we have Świątek as the top seed, Goff as the second seed, Rybakina as their Jabeur, Ostapenko, etc. Already some results from today. Osaka beating Garcia. They've met yet again this year already. Raducanu's already lost, as we mentioned earlier. Świątek was on court a minute ago, but I think she has won. Joel, any predictions? Who's coming through this week in Doha?
Coco Gauff?
Chris? You going with that?
I think I probably would go Świątek. She plays well out here and she's pretty fresh, I'd say.
Yeah, she's annihilated Kostea today. So if her first match is anything to go by, that does bode well for Świątek fans. Let's look also at Delray Beach. Taylor Fritz is the top seed. Francis Tiafoe, Tommy Paul in action. Whole host of Americans, as always, in this event.
This might as well just be Dallas Open 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Evans and Liam Brody are also in the draw. I think Dan Evans has had some good times at this event in previous years. So I'd be looking to see what he can do.
Yeah. It's got a tough opener, I think, against Jordan Thompson. That is not the easiest, you know, not the easiest start. But this will be a good test for him. And, you know, for Tommy Paul, I don't see any reason why he can't kind of continue and maybe even make it two titles in 2 weeks, because, you know, he's been playing great tennis. It's the same sort of event, same sort of caliber, I think, of players. And who knows, he might come out
the
on top.
The Delray Dallas double.
Ooh, exactly, it's what everyone
wants
to win.
That's great alliteration. Absolutely. And then the Cordoba Open was last week. We now have the Buenos Aires Open this week. Carlos Alcaraz is there and Cam Norrie. I presume this was the one last year that Norrie got the better of Alcaraz at. Am I right in thinking?
I think that Alcaraz won his first title back and then he lost in the final in Rio.
Oh, in the next one.
A lot of points for Norrie to defend here. But yes, it was they did exchange finals and results in the Golden Swing last year.
Well, we do have Tennis Weekly is in South America, which is very exciting. Our producer, Alina, is at the Argentina Open and Chris caught up with her just recently. So let's have a listen.
And I believe now we have Alina, producer Alina from Buenos Aires. If I'm saying that right, I'm saying Buenos Noches to you as well, am I?
It's Buenos Aires, and it's actually Buenos Dias here in Buenos Aires. It's morning, and I suppose it's evening right where you are there.
It is evening here, so I didn't get anything exactly right, and I could have easily looked that up, so that is on me. But you're on site at the IEB Argentina Open. Tennis Weekly is covering the Golden Swing. You're there for the qualies. What have you seen so far, and what's the atmosphere like?
Yes, you're right, Chris. Well, we're going to be here the entire week, and you're going to have so much more time to practice your Spanish and your buenos in the meantime.
Sí, sí.
We've been at the qualies, and what a show that was. The qualies this year was free, so the public was invited to attend free of charge. So the crowds were really great and super excited to see some really good tennis. They're such great cheerers, especially with all the Argentinians and the qualifying draws. And there was some interesting battles going on, like Navón and Moutet had a really, really interesting duel.
Oh, it's always spicy when Moutet is on the tennis court. You sent some pictures of he was drinking Pepsi and only serving underarm. So it's already got going and it's just the qualies.
Yes. And he got quite chatty with the crowds. Let's just put it that way.
Is that something that Cam Norrie will have to do, get chatty with the crowds in order to be fired up in Buenos Aires and have a deep run down there?
let's just hope he's not going to meet one of the favorites of the Argentinian crowd. I think that will be good for him.
If you can survive playing against Alcaraz in two finals in the Golden Swing, I'm pretty sure he can survive anything. But you mentioned the Argentinians. You are partial to an Argentinian. I was going to say, who's your pick of the Argentinians to make a deep run this year?
Yeah, you got me there. I have quite a sweet spot for the Argentinian players, especially Fran Cerúndolo. He's one of the favorites, and I really do hope he's going to make it quite far in the tournament. Yes, Tomás Martín Echeverri, he's also quite high up on the list. So let's see how far they make it. I'm going to be there impartially cheering, of course.
And will you be cheering on Arthur Fils as well, who's playing against Lajovic, who actually you attended a DJ set by Dusan Lajovic at 4 p.m, an official DJ set, and that was before the tournament even got started. So the Golden Swing really does hit different.
Imagine a day party with Dusan Lajovic playing for you. Like, that is
and some tennis.
And some tennis happening on the side. So you have like the crowds cheering from the Guillermo Vilas central court. And then on the other side, you have Dusan Lajovic playing at the decks for you and having like a great time.
Make it make sense, but also, can it get better than that? And you'll be covering all the crazy events that might happen in Argentina over the next week. You'll be speaking to some players. Hopefully, we'll try and get some time with Carlos Alcaraz and Cam Norrie. And right now, who are you headed to see?
Well, it's pouring now in Buenos Aires, so we are looking at some possible rain delays, but hopefully, yes, we're going to see a quite a fiery Cilic match against Marcelo Jarre. And also for the evening session, we have Stan Wawrinka playing, so that's quite exciting.
Yeah, and we'll see who's DJing throughout the week, or if it is just Lajovic getting more action on the DJ decks than on the court. But thanks, Lena, and enjoy your time in Argentina.
Thank you, Chris.
I am really sad I was not there for a Dusan Lajovic DJ set. I mean, that sounds very interesting. It sounds like something I want to be at.
It sounds like something you should be at. I mean, why didn't they ask you for, you know, a Joel Tennis Weekly DJ set?
We needed to get... We should have celebrated Tennis Weekly episode 400 proper and got a Dusan Lajovic DJ set. I wonder what his rate card is. Yeah,
yeah, I mean... probably too expensive for us and probably not a good use of crowdfunder money.
He'll be cheaper than Taylor Swift.
Yes, it would
so
be.
I think
Lajovic it is.
I mean, they have a lot of extra tricks up their sleeves, don't they? I had no idea he could DJ, but there we go. I'm interested to see what Dardari will do. Actually, he's in the draw in this one again, so we'll see how he goes. But that's it for us for this week. We'll be back as always next week to catch up on the latest batch of tournaments. So I can't wait to speak to you guys next week and catch up as usual. I can't wait to see how Alina gets on and enjoys Argentina. Very, very jealous
of the weather. She's in 31 degrees when I was in minus 21. That's like a 50-something degree difference. It seems hugely improbable.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very exciting indeed. Listeners, we do have one quick ask from you. We are launching our Tennis Weekly survey just to see how the pod is doing. So if you want to help us improve the show, the link is in the description. It literally takes about 3 minutes, but it would really, really help us just to understand what our listeners are thinking about the show. So if you could do that, link is in the description. Thank you very much. But we're going to end it there. I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from the ATP and WTA tours.
We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media if you want to see all of the action from Argentina this week, but also all the UTS clips from the interviews that we've done. So we have clips from Team, Rublev, Bublik, and many others that are now on our social channels. And we're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. And the handle for all of those is Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase Tennis Weekly merch at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us, tennisweeklypod@gmail.com. Or do check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next Monday at Tennis Weekly HQ. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.